Good day, radio listeners. It's time for Pure Sex Radio. This is the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles and learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction. And get serious about purity. Your hosts are Jonathan Daugherty, director of Be Broken Ministries, and Steven Cervantes, founder of Hope Counseling Center. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Steven on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's broadcast of the Pure Sex Radio program. We are glad you have decided to join us. We always look forward to having new listeners, and so we look forward to whoever's listening to us this week. My name is Jonathan Daugherty, and I'm here with Steven Cervantes. Good morning, Steven.
Hey, Jonathan.
You know, this week we want to talk about the issue of grace, and I want to talk about grace as motivation for being a man or woman of purity. I think a lot of times we don't necessarily see grace that way. And I think a lot of times many folks come into recovery for a lot of different reasons, and then they try to continue their recovery by having what I consider to be very poor motivators. And I want to share a couple of what I think are the poor motivators that people try to use to keep them, you know, motivated to continue towards purity, but they always end up failing. They always end up being bad motivators. And then hopefully we'll be able to transition into talking about God's grace as the best motivator for walking in purity. Several of the poor motivators, I think one of the poorest motivators that I see probably as the most common one is fear. Fear is this idea that you're going to come into recovery and you're going to say, okay, I'm going to be this person of purity because I'm afraid of ever getting caught again, or I'm afraid of my wife leaving me, or I'm afraid of, you know, just whatever the fear is, and thinking that that's going to be your motivator for long-term recovery growth. Steven, how do you think fear works as a motivator?
Not well.
Yeah.
When you were talking about someone else's anger, frustration, intimidation, you know, they're stressing you out and scaring you, you know, all of those, someone else's motivation, those are pretty poor motivators.
Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is, though, I do think fear can be a good immediate motivator. Like a short-term motivator. I mean, how many times have you seen a guy come in a group and he's just been caught red-handed?
It seems like most. I was thinking about that earlier. It almost takes that energy, you know, it's a fear energy or a fear uncertainty that pushes someone to act.
And this guy, when he comes in, just got caught, he's like the model group member for a week or two, right?
That's great.
Maybe even a month or two, because he's so terrified that his secret's out there, that it's going to ruin his reputation, he might lose his job, whatever the fear might be, and that's his immediate motivator for either being in group or getting counseling or getting help. But the problem with fear is fear can never produce joy, contentment, passion.
Mm.
You can never have those, they don't exist simultaneously in a heart that's gripped by fear. I mean, it's very difficult to be passionate and joyful in life if you're completely gripped by fear.
Yes.
And so it's not a good long-term motivator, because it just continues to keep a person under the weight of that burden of fear. I think another poor motivator is anger. Because, I think it's another short-term motivator. A lot of people will say, well, you just got to get, you know, if you just get mad enough at your problem, if you just get mad enough at pornography and mad enough at our culture and mad, mad, mad. I tried that. But you know what I ended up doing? I just get mad at myself. I just started beating myself up, which doesn't really serve much of a purpose. I mean, I'd bloody my own nose, and so I'd be good for about 48 hours. I just beat myself up enough or just got mad enough. But the problem is anger, again, doesn't produce joy. It doesn't produce content. It doesn't really give you direction. It often just kind of gets out of control in a rage, to where all of a sudden everything in its path gets destroyed, and you're not really building anything. You're just trying to tear things down.
It's like unbridled energy or misdirected energy or something.
Yeah, misdirected probably is good.
That turns back on you, inside you, and those around you, and you're just hurt and disappointed, angry, and thrashing around, but no sense of lasting motivation.
Mm-hmm. And fear and anger don't seem to give you much of a direction, do they? They're giving you they're trying to point you away from something, but they're not pointing you toward anything. You know, it's like, okay, I'm afraid of my reputation being hurt. I'm afraid of this, so I'm going to try to stay away from these certain behaviors that were part of the problem. But does fear ever really point you in the direction of purity, or anger point you in the direction of something positive and powerful? No, I don't think it does. And I think another poor motivator that kind of goes along well with the anger, like I said, just started getting angry at myself, is guilt and shame. If your motivator... Mm. is just about, you know, being self-hating and just, you know, all the feelings of guilt, and you start just being self-deprecating, and you're the worst person on the planet, and why do you even exist? And that's not a good motivator. I mean, again, it doesn't point you towards anything positive.
Okay. What about saving something? Is that a good motivator? I want to save a relationship, save a friendship, save. I'm in here to save something. Is that a good motivator?
You know, I tried that at first. I thought my original motivation was to try to get my wife back because she left. And so, and even when I think I started getting in the right direction of trying to my recovery being about me and my own health, I still think there was a little bit of a motivator there of, well, if I do these certain things, then she'll come back because I'll represent something that she wants. But you know what? What happens when the relationship's restored, or what happens when whatever that thing is happens?
But that sounds like manipulation a little bit. I'll do some of this because I want some of that.
But if that's your motivator,
right?
Let's say your motivator is saving a relationship. Well, if that relationship comes back together, what's motivating you now?
Mm.
Not that anymore, right? So why would you continue after the thing that you were shooting for?
Yeah, your motivation probably drops
once
you accomplish your mission of saving, your short-term mission. Just, you know, don't do it again. Just don't do it again. That's a good motivator for a little bit. I'm not going to do it ever again. I promise no more.
Yeah.
Well, that's good for a week or so.
If that long. Well, I want to transition here to talking about grace as the best motivator. And a lot of people might think grace, you know, what is grace? Well, grace is unmerited favor, something we've been given that we don't deserve. And when you think about it in the context of God's grace, He has given us something through what Christ did on the cross that we don't deserve. He gave us freedom. He gave us freedom from this thing called sin. And it doesn't mean that we don't continue to struggle with it. We still have this body with this flesh that just longs for that which is opposed to the freedom that God's given us. But we have been given this freedom. And I want to put this grace in the context of recovery. And I want to make two statements that you may bristle when you first hear them. And that is, I want to look at grace as freedom to fail and freedom to succeed. Now, most of you, if you're anything like me, bristle at that statement that grace gives us the freedom to fail. Because I think we've been so indoctrinated in our Christian culture, especially, that you are just, I mean, the aim is perfection. Any failure is a representation of something that's gone wrong in your faith, and somehow you have, you could fall beyond the reach of God's grace and mercy if you fail too many times. But what if I said that grace gives you the freedom to fail on the journey? How do you respond to that?
Wow, I was just thinking as you were talking, I cannot be perfection. Therefore, it must mean I will fail. I have failed. I do fail, I will fail. And when you say you have freedom to fail, I can just catch my breath and settle down and know that God is on the failing side of me and God is on the winning side of me. Mm. God's on both sides. He's got me covered. I can't slip out. I can't make a mistake and he goes, well, I couldn't go there. I couldn't be there for that mistake.
Mm, that's good.
You know, so the way it strikes me is I just catch a breath and go, whew, I think I need that. Because I can't hold perfection.
Well, it's like, and that imagery that you use, I think, is great because it's like the umbrella of God's grace is big enough to cover all of me.
Right. Yes.
The secret places, the failing places,
yes.
the victorious places, it covers all of that. And I think what we tend to do, especially those who've gotten into a recovery community. It so presses us toward perfect behavior,
yes.
That sometimes the weight of that causes us to believe that that grace cannot cover the struggles that we face and the failures that we have along the journey. You know, I don't know about you, Stephen, but I have yet to meet a single person who has had a moment in time where they realized that they had a problem with pornography or lust or some sexual temptation. I've failed to meet a person yet who has had that point in time where they started moving in the direction of purity and have taken the journey perfectly. Where they never had a failure, where they never had a struggle.
Yes.
And that's just it. We're all in that same community.
When I think it was life transforming for me to recognize that His grace covered my shortcomings and my failings and my routines and any repeat offenses that I had. And the way I conceptualize it is it's like my child. If my child does something wrong, you know, they still have my love. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to talk about it. We want to kind of hide it. We don't want it to be there. Nobody likes to talk about their failings.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when I got the insight that I'm His son, when I'm really looking good and when I'm not looking so good, I'm His son.
And you'll always be, yeah.
That's that grace covering that causes me to catch my breath and go, it's okay, it's just okay. If you fail, it's still okay.
Mm-hmm.
We don't lose our the blood covering, the sacrifice wasn't dependent on our performance.
Right.
You know, it was that He could hold perfection.
And you know what? I want to make this clear. There's a difference between the statement that grace gives us the freedom to fail and somehow thinking that grace calls us to fail.
Or it gives you permission to go out there and start failing.
Or that it's asking you to fail.
Yes, yes, that's good.
That's very different. In fact, in Romans 6, we're told, therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its desires. And don't offer the parts of your body to sin. But as those who are alive from the dead, offer yourselves and to God and all the parts of yourselves to God as weapons of righteousness. And then this great verse in verse 14 says, for sin will not rule over you because you are not under law but under grace. See, we've been freed from all the imposed laws that were not ever designed to actually control our behavior. They were only designed to point out how desperately we needed a savior.
Mm.
I mean, so the law was never intended for us to actually keep in the first place. So the idea that grace, we are not under the law, we're under grace, it's like it lifts this burden of having any imposed rules or regulations. And it makes it about a relationship that we have with God. And so the way I see grace as a motivator is it not only gives me the freedom to fail, of recognizing that it's going to be a messy process because I'm involved in it. If it were
right.
Just God, it wouldn't be a messy process. But I'm involved in it. I'm imperfect. I have flaws. And so the process will be messy. But the neat thing about it is that it's not that God desires for me to fail. He even says, don't give your body over to these lustful desires.
Mm.
Instead, offer your body to God. And so it's like, I have on this journey, I have this great opportunity as temptations come to think of it in terms of where am I going to give my body? And because I'm under grace, I have the freedom to fail. I can make a stupid choice and I can say, here, I'm going to give this to lust. Or I have the freedom to succeed. And that's the other part of this thing about grace. See, if we are not if we're not a believer in Christ, you don't have the freedom to succeed. That's a grace thing. Grace not only gives you the freedom to make mistakes and goof up, grace also empowers you to succeed. And that's where I get excited about grace, because all the imposition of the law has been removed. I'm not...
Well, and that's the power of this message, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Grace gives you the power to succeed. Because under the old way, I'm thinking, you know, you can't do that. You shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't do that anymore. Or be careful. And you know what you did before. And it's just like getting caught up in this loop of trying to perform but failing, but trying to perform and failing. But the whole concept that you have freedom to fail or you have freedom to succeed. In a moment, in a challenge, if you think about those two choices, then I think we were talking in a previous program about walking in repentance and walking out transformation. When you are faced with the freedom to fail or the freedom to succeed, and you release your right to do stupid things and embrace your Father's plan for success, you know, mm-hmm. you have embraced grace.
Well, and I think grace, I think what God's grace does is it removes the issue of sin completely. I mean, if you think about it, because it makes it about relationships. God's saying, listen, my grace has covered every sin you've ever committed in the past, you're committing right now, and you're going to commit in the future. It's not about that anymore. It's about the freedom that you have to grow in this relationship with God.
So is the choice then to embrace God or to embrace your old ways?
That's what I think it boils down to. It's saying, do I have the faith as a mustard seed to believe that God's grace has completely covered me? And therefore, I have this opportunity to move toward Him. And as I move toward Him, you know what automatically happens the closer you get to God? Your behaviors tend to clean up.
Yes.
And so when you quit thinking of things in terms of, am I doing the right behavior? Am I doing the wrong behavior? Which that's all imposed in a bunch of rules, right?
Right.
When you start seeing is, am I moving toward God or am I moving away from God? Because it really does boil down to relationship. And I like it that God has removed all of the... removed all of those parameters and all of those, what I mean is all those rules that somehow we think we have to keep, and makes it all about His ability to do something in us that we're not able to do. I love it in Galatians 5, it says that Christ, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, stand firm and don't submit again to a yoke of slavery. What I love about that is He doesn't say, our only responsibility is to stand firm in what He's already provided for us. He's already said, listen, I've done everything that's needed to be done to set you free. Your only responsibility is just stand in that freedom. Mm-hmm. But what do we tend to do? We want to drift. We want to drift. And that's why, to me, grace is the motivator, because the grace is saying, you know what, you do have a choice. You have a choice to either embrace the old way, drift away, and go back into a yoke of slavery, which is self-imposed, right? And a lot of times I think that yoke of slavery is not necessarily those acting out behaviors, but putting ourselves under a burden of a bunch of rules, a bunch of regulations. If I'm not doing this, if I'm doing that, I got to do this. And it's a guilt-ridden system. Whereas grace is saying, no, I've set you free from all that. Would you just stand in that freedom? You don't have to move. Just stand in that freedom.
Well, meaning in my presence, right?
Exactly.
Stand in relationship. Just hold the moment. Mm-hmm. And I have this concept of when we are embracing our Father, we're holding His hand. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we get distracted as we're walking along. And you can almost see this father and small son walking along, and then something catches his eye, and he releases his father's his hand from his father and he runs off to do something, you know. Mm-hmm. And the question is, will you embrace the moment with your father and not get distracted, not run off to be entertained, not say, I'll be right back, Dad. Just keep your hand out. I'm going to grab it again in a minute, but I got to run over here for some real fun, and then I'll come back.
Yeah.
Can you stay in the relationship in the moment?
And I think that's where we just have to broaden our perspective of grace. Because you know what? The Father lets us run off every now and then. We're still his child. We haven't quit being his kid, but he allows us to get distracted. You know, he allows us to, but that his grace is still big enough to cover all that.
Yes.
And I like to think of grace kind of as God's practice field where we learn to grow in our understanding and application of truth. It's a very large field, you know, it's so large that we could never run off of it, but it's like, it's again, are we walking close with the Father, or are we trying to run off over here and look at all the distractions, the pretty shiny stuff in the window, and that's really what the issue is.
And spend our day over there with the sparkle and the flash, and be entertained, take comfort, get wrapped up in, and all the while having walked away, right? For the moment.
And the how I see this grace as a motivator is it's as if I just feel a freedom. It's like I don't have this burden of law. I don't have this burden of a bunch of rules. It's like God is saying, you know what? I want to walk with you. Let's go on this journey together. Let's not make it about a bunch of rules and a bunch of this, do this and don't do that. Let's make it about, why don't you stick close to me, and I'm going to show you the way. And when you do that, it's like it sets you free to be able to get in motion in your recovery where you're not... What I've tended to see happen to a lot of guys is they get so consumed with the guilt of doing the right thing, not doing the wrong thing. It's all about do and don't and all this. Guess what? They're no longer looking at the Father.
It's like a seesaw.
Yeah.
They're going up and down, up and down, up and down.
And then what they're doing is they're basing all these rules, or they're looking at all these rules and then falsely basing God's acceptance of them on how they're doing on the rules. That's not grace.
No.
It's like we're in this continual, perpetual acceptance from God. And it's not based on what we do. The difference is when we're walking close to Him, we are enjoying the sweet benefit of joy, peace, purity, contentment.
Yes.
The things that we don't get when we're drifting. But it's like, again, He covers all of that. And so that motivates me to want to move toward Him.
And isn't that a statement of His love?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you did good or bad, whether you scraped your knee today or ran the great race today, His grace covers.
And that love stays constant.
Yes, yes.
You know, the love just stays constant.
That even when we're doing good deeds compared to His goodness, we're not doing much, right? But He still covers that.
And see, I think this is a particularly hard broadcast and message for a lot of people to hear, because we get so wrapped up in rules in our lives.
Are you going to give us a step 1, 2, 3 that we have to do?
Not at all. This is grace. But I think we just naturally, we gravitate towards rules. We want those hardline parameters in our life, and God is saying, I've lifted those. And so this is a hard message, especially for those of you listening. I know, because I have been in your shoes. For those of you listening who have really been immersed in shame for a long time, this is a particularly hard message, because shame is all about getting a bunch of parameters in your mind of why God can't accept you, and why God can't love you, and why God can't find you attractive and beautiful. And so if you've been locked in shame, let this message wash over you, because God's grace is bigger than your shame. God goes into those dark places in your mind where you say you're worthless and you have no value, and He says, I covered that too. I've accepted that too.
So I'm going to say something about grace to the listener, and then you say something and we'll wrap up. Are we good?
We're good.
I need the Father's grace today, and I receive the Father's grace today, and I sit in the Father's gift of grace. I haven't been living a perfect life before a perfect God. And so he already said, you know, I knew you were going to stumble, and my grace is sufficient. So I receive, and I hope you, the listener, also receives your Father's grace today.
Mm. And I would just pray that we could all see God's grace for just how big it really is, that there truly is nothing about your life that God's grace cannot cover. And so I just pray that this message would be encouraging to you. For those of you who are still really struggling maybe with the shame issue and not really understanding if you can accept this kind of grace on the journey, please contact us. We want to really help you walk through that and understand that when Christ says that you are free indeed. And that's the reality.
Yes.
So we are out of time. We've appreciated you being with us and pray that this has really been an impactful message for you. We will see you back here again on the Pure Sex Rodeo program next week.
Grace to you.
Folks, I'm really excited to share with you a special promotion that we're going to be running for this week's broadcast. And what this is we have an outstanding workbook that can help you really combat the lies of shame. It's a workbook that I wrote that's called Understanding Shame, Breaking the Power of the Addictive Spiral. And this is a great little resource. It's not a complicated or real long workbook, but it really attacks the issue of shame and will help to really clarify what shame is all about, the effects of shame, and then how to break free from shame. So again, the workbook is Understanding Shame, and here's how you can get it for absolutely no cost. If you will go to our store online, it's pureliferesources.com. Again, that's www.pureliferesources.com. And then when you order the resource Understanding Shame, when you go to check out, just use the promo code SHAMEFREE. Again, that SHAMEFREE will be your coupon code. Use that and you'll get the resource for free. Now you're going to want to move on this because this promotion is only going to be good for the next 2 weeks. Go to pureliferesources.com. Use coupon code SHAMEFREE when you order the Understanding Shame workbook, and you'll get your workbook for free.
Thanks for listening to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial contributions of listeners like you. Please send your notes and donations to Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. Again, the mailing address is 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 415, San Antonio, Texas, 78217. You may also reach us by phone toll-free at 1-800-49-PURITY. Our toll-free number again is 1-800-497-8748. Our website is a great resource for archived broadcasts, helpful resources, and secure donations. Simply visit www.puresexradio.com for more information.